Hello, book lovers. I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio and the Penn Faulkner Foundation. I write novels, and on this show, I get to do one of my favorite things in the world, talk to other writers about their brand new books. And if you're like me, and you get tired of seeing the same old titles on every bestseller list, you are in the right place, because on this show, you'll hear from authors who aren't famous yet, but probably will be. Remember, you heard them here first. Today on my show, Susan Donovan Bernhardt and her sophomore novel, Westerly. This is a sweeping family saga that traces the intertwined lives of three generations of women and the one desperate decision that threatens to break the family wide open. Susan, I am so excited to have you here on my show. Welcome.
Thank you, Rachel, for having me.
So this is actually, I think, my 165th, 166th show that I've ever recorded, and you are my first live author.
It's very cool to be here. I feel very famous.
Susan is in studio. It is amazing. So this is your second novel. Your first novel, Winterloon, was incredible, and I have been waiting for this second book. Westerly focuses on a family who emigrates from Ireland to Maine just after World War II. You have layered secrets within secrets within secrets. How do you describe the book? What is it about?
Well, I guess on the surface, Westerly is a story of two German sisters, little girls after World War II, who are taken to Ireland, part of a refugee program called Operation Shamrock. And they're fostered in West Cork, and there is a terrible tragedy that separates these two sisters, and one of them is taken to America with a name and identity that are not her own. And the novel actually opens 50 years later when her secret and the shame that she's carried are threatened to be exposed to her family and the long-term repercussions that all of that secrecy has had on the family.
So this is a novel, like you said, that takes us from Ireland to Maine. It's about two sisters who are separated after a horrible tragedy. And that's the surface plot. What is it really about for you?
Well, I think that, you know, over the course of writing the novel, it became really clear that this was a book about accepting yourself, about identity. It's about sisterhood and motherhood. And it's about reconciling with our past and kind of owning it, but also how do we seek forgiveness and how do we forgive ourselves for the things that we've done.
Westerly, your novel that we're talking about today on Check This Out, also feels very personal. It feels very intimate. Is there a personal connection for you in this book?
There are different aspects of the book that are kind of from my family. I'm a granddaughter of German and Irish immigrants. So that piece of it felt very personal. There are different parts of the story that relate to people that I've known or situations that I've been familiar with, but it's fiction and everything. There's nothing is real in here except it all is in the best way that fiction can be.
Susan, would you read for us from your brand new novel, Westerly?
Sure. I think really the best thing to read is just the prologue. It sets the story in motion. So the prologue is in 1995, Midcoast, Maine. Faye puts the pies in the oven and turns on the timer, her hands quivering. She hears William in the living room reading picture books to their granddaughter, Nola Wren. The murmur of his voice, the kerplink, kerplank, kerplunk of blueberries hitting Sal's pail. The child giggles, a joy-filled chirp, like birdsong from the yard. The Irish Times sits heavy as an anvil on the table, though the photo there billows like ash above the newsprint, an apparition, the past come to life. Faye wonders how she might lash herself to this kitchen, to William, to the life they've built, anything to keep from being swept away by what the newspaper could unleash. This is her favorite time of the year, the season turning from summer to fall, the way sunlight becomes shimmery and golden. Already squirrels bustle about with green nuts from the oak tree. Already robins congregate in friendly flocks. Yet some storm gathers. She feels it in her bones. It broods there on the table, black and white. She remembers a line, something from a Millet sonnet. My sky is black with small birds bearing south. William gasps, and she knows he has moved on to the theatrics of Miss Spider's Tea Party. That damn newspaper.
Wow, Susan, just this is a prologue. This is the opening of your brand new novel, Westerly. And I swear it reads like Ann Patchett. I feel like you two are twins separated at birth as writers.
Hooray. Tell Ann Patchett.
It is just so good. Susan, your book, Westerly, starts with the end of World War II and focuses on two orphaned sisters who come to Ireland as part of Operation Shamrock. You mentioned that before. What is that? Tell us about it.
Yeah, Operation Shamrock was a real program. It was operated by the Irish Red Cross. And the idea was to bring German war refugees, children, to Ireland to put them in foster care there while their families recovered from war in Germany. So there were about 500 children came from Germany post-World War II and were fostered in Ireland. Most of them returned to Germany to their families. But about 50, I think, ended up staying in Ireland and became Irish citizens.
And these were not Jewish refugees?
No, they were not Jewish refugees. There were no, in fact, they had to be Catholic. There were a few Protestants that came, but I think it was mostly Catholic children.
Wow. I'd never heard of that before.
I hadn't either.
Wow. How did you find it?
It was by accident, actually. We were in Ireland visiting family, and we ended up a little turned around in the Wicklow Mountains, and we pulled into this place called the Glencree Center for Peace and Reconciliation. And it is an old army barracks that has been in operation with different functions over, 150 years. And this was where the children were brought from Germany to be kind of processed out in these old army barracks there. And there was a plaque on the wall about the history of these barracks. And I took a picture of the plaque. We were supposed to go hiking that day. And I think it's about 13 kilometers from Glencree to the trailhead. And in that period of time, these two little girls started tapping on my brain. And my husband and my son went hiking, and I sat in our rental car by the side of the road and wrote the first scenes of Westerly there.
Wow. And your sophomore novel, Westerly, opens then with two sisters who are German refugees. They've lost their mom. They're absolutely traumatized. They're in a terrible headspace, and they show up in Ireland. And we meet the main character. Should we call her Faye?
Sure. Let's call her Faye.
Let's call her Faye. But we meet these two German sisters, and they immediately become best friends with an Irish girl. Tell us about that friendship and those three girls. That is the core of this novel, Westerly.
Yeah. So the two little girls, Gisela and Elizabeth, come to West Cork, and they are befriended by a little girl called Fia. And the three girls, along with a family of three boys, spend the summer together, making mischief and running around on this little peninsula that shoots out into the Atlantic in West Cork. And the friendship between these girls, I think, is really lovely and sweet and very innocent in so many ways. And it is the core of the inciting incident where there's an accident and the three girls are separated, but they're never really separated over the course of the whole novel. They are together in myriad ways.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we're just going to have to talk about, we are giving spoilers.
A little bit.
To talk about Westerly, we're going to have to talk about these characters and what happens.
Yeah.
And it is worth it. And it is worth reading. And also, most of what I think we're going to talk about on this episode really happens in the first third of the book. But these girls, just to be clear, the German refugees and the Irish little girl that they meet, they're all like 7 or 8 years old.
They're actually a little bit older, like nine and 10,
okay,
like in that area. But they're little girls.
Yeah, they're very young. And they show up, and then they decide one day that they're going to go out on this adventure, and they're going to go, on this raft sort of out to an island. And tell us what happens. Tell us about this adventure.
So the three girls, so what the impetus for this adventure is that Fia and her family are going to America. They have just found out that they're heading for America. And they want to have one last adventure. And the O'Kane boys, the little boys who live nearby, they kind of goad them into rowing this little boat out to an island in the bay. And so the little girls go to the island and they dance and they play and they're so happy to be together, but they're so sad that Fia is leaving. And it's just, it's sweetness in so many ways. And it's like one of the scenes that I love the most. Honestly, I loved writing it. I spent a lot of time thinking about it. They are so happy, but they're also so foolish. And one of the girls falls into the water and another girl jumps in to save her. And one girl stays in the boat. And this leads to this tragedy that ends up separating all three of the girls.
Yeah, Sophia actually ends up dying while she's trying to save them.
Fia does.
Yeah, and she's the Irish girl. And
yes.
So we have the two German girls are left. And, I mean, it's tragic. It's so horrible. And everyone, the families are, you know, completely destroyed. Everyone's destroyed. And this is where all of the secrets start.
Yes.
If you're just joining us, I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out on New Hampshire Public Radio. And my guest today is Susan Donovan Bernhard. We are talking about her brand new novel, Westerly. And we were just talking about how this book opens with a horrible tragedy. We have three little girls. They're on a raft. They're having fun. They're just out for a picnic. They're being kids. And one of them drowns. And it's horrible. And the families respond by, in this crazy way, basically they switch their identities. And one of the Irish families who was going to be leaving for America takes one of the German girls and basically steals her away, kidnaps her. I don't know. Talk about this. Takes her to America as their own.
Yeah. I mean, it's kidnapping. It's adoption, I suppose, in some strange way. I think in a lot of ways, when I was researching Operation Shamrock, some of these children were treated really well and really welcomed into their homes. And some of them were treated like servants and they were moved from family to family. They were doing heavy labor in some of these homes. And I think that in some ways they were treated as property. And it's kind of how that happened. You know, this terrible tragedy has happened. This mother has lost now her third child, and she cannot imagine living with this tragedy. And her friend says, take one of these German girls into your house. Just take her. They don't have anything else. What else do they have? They don't have anything back in Germany, and they don't have anything here. They're resilient. They'll survive. Everybody survives. Take her. Do this thing. And you know, part of the core of understanding what happens at the end of this novel is understanding how these two little girls who are children of war responded to the tragedy they'd already experienced in Germany. This is off the page, right? This happens before.
Right. They've already lost their mother.
Exactly. And so they've seen things and they have experienced things that have already created trauma in them. And these two little girls, Gisela and Elizabeth, their trauma responses are very different. And I've had people say, oh, how could they be separated? They could never have tolerated this. But that's not true. We respond to trauma in different ways. And for Gisela and for Elizabeth, they each responded differently. Elizabeth would die to keep them together. And Gisela wanted safety. That's it. That's what she wanted. She wanted to be safe.
Yeah. But also these two little girls, I mean, they are survivors.
Yes.
Right? They literally crawled out of the rubble in Germany.
Yes.
Right? They survived. And so, I can't imagine that they wouldn't find a way through the separation. Like, I believed it. I went with it because at its core, these girls want to live.
Yes.
So when Gisela gets to America, basically her adoptive parents, kidnapping parents, her new parents, rename her. And
yes.
They say, right, because they had all the paperwork done for their daughter. And so they basically anoint her now as Faye.
Yes.
And they tell her, right, never talk about it.
Right.
This is the secret of your life.
Yeah.
And we are at a time, right, when people hate Germans. They, right, no one wants to hear German. Just, you are Irish.
Right.
And in a sense, I can understand how they would think, like, we are giving you the world.
Yes.
We're giving you America.
Yes.
We're giving you a new chance. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. And I think that that when this little German girl arrives in America, you know, she has already come to Ireland that had not experienced the war that she had experienced. And now she comes to America thinking that, you know, America was in war, so there must be war there, but there wasn't war in America. The, you know, World War II was not fought on American soil. And she comes to Maine and it's beautiful. And it is a beautiful and safe life. And so she is complicit in that as well. She wants this beautiful, safe life. And yeah. the tragedy behind some of this, too, is that Jean, the mother, realizes very early on that she is not her daughter and cannot love her the way that she loved a daughter. But Thomas can. And so she has. So what this German girl has now is a father who loves her in a home that is safe, in a place that feels safe. And she's lost something, but she's found something too. And she wants to protect it.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that World War II wasn't fought the same way on U.S. soil as it was.
The bombs didn't drop on
mainland. Yeah, in Maine.
The bombs didn't drop in Maine. They didn't drop on U.S. mainland soil.
Right, because we certainly had Pearl Harbor, of course.
Absolutely.
You know. And what we do have are a bunch of soldiers who have returned to Maine, who have been to Europe, right, who are still living with that trauma of having been there, of having fought, of having, you know, been literally in the trenches and lived through that.
Yeah.
And we see them in one of my absolute favorite characters, William. I mean, this setup is unbelievable. Faye falls in love with a man who fought against Germany in Germany. Let's talk about William.
Yeah.
I could not get enough of William.
I love William. William is kind of like, so my father fought in World War II and then came home and married a German girl, my mother. So my mother's parents were German and immigrated to this country. And my father came home from World War II, he helped build the Alaska-Canada Highway, the Alcan Highway, and then was sent to France and Germany. And he came home and married my German mom. And we never really talked about that as kids. We were just Irish. We talked about our Irishness, not our German part at all. And so some of that relationship between William and Faye is kind of an idealized version of my parents, where our family was Irish. We didn't talk about this other side of it at all. And William is kind of a version of my father. Is like the best version of my father. My father was not this man, but he is the best version of him.
But he was just, William in the book, Westerly, is just so sweet. And he never knows that his wife was German.
No, never. She never tells him. And his friend, Thomas, who is Faye's father, her Irish father, never tells him either. It's a secret that they keep. And they decide that it's the best thing to do is to keep it secret, that there's no reason to tell him. What would that gain? They would not gain anything. And so this is the secret she keeps. But it comes back at her because someone from Ireland shows up in Maine and threatens to blow it all open.
I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. My guest today is Susan Donovan Bernhard, and we are talking about her brand new novel, Westerly. We were talking about the huge bombshell, massive secret in this book, which is that the main character, Faye, is actually German. She's been kidnapped, pulled out of, right? She's gone from Germany to Ireland. She's now in the U.S., and she lives a whole life with a very loving, adoring husband, William, without ever telling anybody that she is actually German. Everyone thinks that she was Irish. I'm now American. What a secret for someone to live with. What is the toll of that secret on her?
I mean, that's the core of the story, is that she's keeping this secret. But it's also the shame of lying to her husband. It's the secret is one thing, but it's the lying, I think, for her that makes her continue to keep the secret. Because once you've told the lie, to go back on it and expose yourself as that liar and to threaten everything that this whole relationship was built on would be devastating for her. And she is about safety. She wants to keep herself safe. She wants to keep her marriage safe. And now she has two daughters who she also wants to keep safe, Maeve and Molly.
Yeah. I mean, throughout this book, I kept thinking, I went back and forth. It was like ping pong. I was like, no big deal. Just keep the secret. Who cares? And then I was like, major deal. You are lying to your husband and everybody in your life.
About who you are.
Yeah. And that you've lost your sister, mm-hmm. who was like the most dear person to her in the world, and never talked about what she lived through, the bombing and losing her own mother.
Right.
Right. She was never allowed to talk about that. And then I keep going, no big deal. You have a happy life in America. You have a family that loves you.
You're Faye. That's it. That's exactly it.
Right.
You know, tell the story. Don't tell the story. Tell the story. Don't tell
right.
the story.
And I went with it the whole time. And I kept asking, so do secrets like this protect or poison? And is there an answer?
I think they do both. I mean, she was doing what she thought was the right thing. And once she told the initial lie, once the initial lie was told, everything else was fine. As long as that lie holds, right? Everything else is fine. No one got hurt by it, but the poison of keeping that shame inside is what made her, every time something came up in her daughters' lives, her response was the same as it had been as a child. Keep it secret. Don't talk about it. Don't expose yourself. It's all about safety. And so for both Maeve and Molly, they live with that coda, basically.
Yeah. So it's basically, in your novel, Westerly, it's the mother teaching her daughters to live with secrets.
Yes.
And so I'm thinking, is she's constantly trying to protect her children, but is it causing harm? And this really gets to the core of what is motherhood that I think you're wrestling with in this book. So by teaching your children to live with giant secrets, right? This is not a small secret that she was German, right? By teaching them, right, like what kind of mother is that? Is that just what a mother does?
That's a really good question because, like, I would like to think that as a mother that I have not kept important secrets from my children. But it is my life. I don't have to expose myself. I mean, motherhood doesn't require you to literally rip yourself open and expose every good and bad thing you've ever done in your whole life so that your children can live from your mistakes. They have to live their lives. They have to make their own mistakes, and they have to recover from those mistakes as well. But we do set in motion this way of looking at the world. And that's what Faye did. She set in motion this way of looking at the world, which is if bad things happen, you suppress them. You put a lid on them. You don't have to explore them. You don't have to dig around in the dirt of your problems. You can just put that aside. You can compartmentalize it, put that over here, and go on with your life. That happened, but now it's not happening anymore. Go on.
Yeah. And that's exactly what the girls did when they arrived in Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. And my guest today is Susan Donovan Bernhard. We are talking about her brand new novel, Westerly. And we are talking about the power of secrets and inheriting, I don't know if you want to call it the skill or the burden of secret keeping. Because in the second generation, we have another horrible moment where one of Faye's daughters pushes a man to his death. And in that moment, the mother, Faye, says, we're never talking about this again.
Yes.
Right? This is another huge secret.
Yes.
Like, she's literally teaching her daughters how to bury secrets. And again, I, in my head, am thinking, I'm in your world. I'm in the novel Westerly. And I'm like, good call. Right? Like, you protected your daughter. The police are not going to touch her. They're not going to question her. Like, you did right as a mom. And then my other, 2026 brain is saying, yeah, but she's going to have a lot of guilt and trauma, right? Because she pushed a man to his death, or she thinks she did.
That's your 2026 brain talking. And I think it's so interesting because I had two readers pretty late in the process. One of them was like, what's the big deal? She's going to be fine. He was a bad guy. Who cares? I don't buy that this would cause her trauma. And another reader, right on the heels of that comment, was like, this girl will not survive if she does not get therapy right now. Like, there's no possible way she's going to move on from this. And so I do think it's really important when you're reading fiction that is not set today. It doesn't have to be like historical fiction. It doesn't have to be the 1800s, but to recognize what resources are available, what the thinking of the time is. And I think for Faye at that time, forget about it. It didn't happen. It's over. Move on. I feel like, my mother had a way of making everything small. She would say, how's your little job? How's your little this? You know, make everything small. Every issue becomes a small thing, your little thing, so that nothing blows up, right? But now everything is a big thing, right?
Yeah. But I actually loved how, so the daughter that pushes the man to his death is Molly, and she is living with this guilt, and she definitely lashes out. Like, it affects her in big, big ways. Yeah. And then when she finally is able to talk about it with her family years and years later, everyone around her is like, no big deal. The guy was a creep. Mm-hmm. Like, and also, you were a little kid. There's no way. Like, he must have been so drunk and being so scary that you pushed him, mm-hmm. and that it was able to make him fall, right? Like, you shouldn't, like, it shouldn't have happened. Like, don't blame yourself. And I just found that to be such a relief, right? And I felt so bad for her that she felt so bad for years, and then she was just given, like, it was no big deal. No one else is thinking about it.
Well, and if she had been able as a child to, like, really go over this a few times—
Right.
It might have affected her differently, but she wasn't. She had to carry. And, you know, Westerly, too, is a book about ghosts and what haunts us. And she is haunted by this in a way that is unique to her, too. And we all get to experience those hauntings and our feelings uniquely to us. And for Molly, she could not let go. She felt him on her hands for her. Through into her adult life, she felt him on her hands.
We're talking about Susan Donovan Bernhard's new novel, Westerly. She feels this guilt on her hands. And in this sense, the book is also really about morality and the gray lines, right? A lot of people in this book are not entirely innocent, right? So Molly, Faye, the Irish mother, Jean, who kidnaps, right?
Yeah.
The child, right? There's sort of these gray lines because you could say, in every case, they meant well. They were doing the best they could.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet you can also stand back from our 2026 high horse and say, but that wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
So this question of what was the right decision, I mean, I don't know that there's an answer, but I love that you're bringing out morality in here.
Well, and it's kind of a question of morality, and it's really how most of us, I think, function on a daily basis. We're really trying to do the best we can. We're trying to do the right thing most of the time. You know, we have these core beliefs and we follow them through and we think we're doing the best we can. And when I set out to write Westerly early on, it was less messy than it is now because I really did want to write a novel about nice people making mistakes and having to deal with them.
But your job as a writer, I mean, you did it brilliantly because we don't want to just see somebody like shoving someone and they scrape their knee, right? A little girl shoves a man and he dies.
Mm-hmm.
That is novel, right? Feast right there. You can't just let your characters be a sort of middle. They've got to really go to the extremes to make us think about these issues.
Well, and for other characters in that moment too, this solved a problem.
Yes, it did.
You know, she didn't kill anybody. It was an accident. She pushed him. He died. He was drunk. He was threatening them. She didn't push him, you know, with a dagger. Like, she pushed him with her little hands, right?
Yeah.
But his death solved a lot of problems, or so we think, right? It solved problems for Maeve. It solved problems for Faye and created problems for Molly.
Yeah, it did. I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. My guest today is Susan Donovan Bernhard, and we are talking about her brand new novel, Westerly. Susan, we're talking about this horrible moment for the family when one of the little girls, Molly, defends the family, gives him a little push. He's so drunk, this man that she pushes, and he ends up dying. You pointed out it's not murder, right?
It's not murder.
It's not. It's an accident. And let's talk about the character who dies here. Connor O'Kane. He is a villain. He is horrible. Like, I hated him. And yet, he needed to be there on every single page. Mm. Tell us about him.
I love Connor O'Kane. But I do love my villains, honestly. And I felt for him. He is such a tragic character. He has lost so much in his little life, and he comes to America, and he thinks, he had this moment, you could just imagine it off the page, where he thinks he is going to find the girl of his childhood dreams. And he...
Who is Faye? He was in love with the Irish Faye who died.
As a little boy, he was in love with Fia. And he believes that he is going to show up at Fia's wedding. And that she might see him and everything is going to change. All his luck, all his Irish luck is going to change from bad to good in that moment. And instead, he finds out the truth.
Being that Fia, who is now Faye, actually died, but that Gisela has now stepped in as Faye. So his beloved is dead.
Yes. And so he is an Irishman to the core, and he holds a grudge. And the grudge goes on for another decade after he finds this out. He could have exposed Faye right there and then as being a German girl, and he could have exposed everything and probably ruined the wedding, changed the course of her life, but he didn't. He held a grudge instead, and he used his information to taunt and torment her until he died, until the day he died. That's what he did. And I don't love him. I love him, but I don't love him because I really feel his pain. I felt his pain the whole time. And I loved writing the scene where he died because there is a moment there where you get to see his humanity on his dying breath.
Yeah. But I thought that you wrote him brilliantly because he was a threat that I was terrified of for Faye and for her girls. But he never actually touched them. Mm-mm. Like, he never does anything physically violent, and yet he felt so violent to me. Yeah. I was terrified of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And why didn't you push? You pushed every other character, right, all the way to the end, right, with these huge secrets, right? One little girl accidentally kills him, right? Another woman is taking over, you know, her childhood friend's identity, like these huge secrets. But Connor, like the true bad guy, the true villain, never does anything so horrible. Why not?
Well, because I don't think that he's really that horrible. I think he's a really damaged man, and I think he's constantly trying to make himself bigger than he is. And you see that he threatens women more than men. He's very obsequious when it comes to William and to Thomas. He's very much wanting to get in their good favor. He's really not trying to get under their skin the way tries to get under Faye's skin. And I think that his power comes from lording it over women. And I had no interest in turning him into anything more than the bad guy that he is. I mean, to me, he was kind of a cross between this man that I knew when I was a little girl, who was a friend of my father's, who might have been in the IRA, who came to our house when we were kids in Montana, who maybe my dad had hired to take a hit out on somebody one drunk night.
Whoa! And wow!
I'm guessing my mom probably talked my dad out of that hit, but that's the story in our family, is that my dad hired this friend to take a hit out on somebody.
Wow.
Yeah. And so Connor is kind of that guy, kind of the devil in boots.
So Connor comes to America looking for reinvention. Faye basically comes to America, well, against her will. I mean, she didn't really choose it, but she sort of did. Her and then her parents, Jean and Thomas, choose, right? You have a lot of characters trying to reinvent themselves.
Yes.
To become new people. And we do that. They try to do that in America. Is reinvention possible? Can you do that? I mean, I feel like that sounds like maybe a simple question, but really, if you have all this baggage in the back, can you ever actually become a whole new person?
Well, I think that probably is one of the themes of Westerly, is what does it take to to reinvent yourself? What does it take to become your authentic self? Let's say it that way. You know, if you don't like who you are, if you feel like there's somebody more true on the inside, what does it take to shed the artifice of the identity you've created to be your authentic self? And that's Maeve's journey for sure as well. You know, she thinks that she has to have a perfect marriage, like what she envisions is her parent, William and Faye's marriage. She thinks their marriage is perfect. She doesn't know that their marriage is built on this essential lie that Faye has told to William. And so she's trying to model her life after something that isn't true. But that thing inside of her is burning away at her. And when she even starts to come out literally as a gay woman, she still is trying to create a life that looks like her parents with a woman. And it takes the whole journey of Westerly for her to see that that's what she's been trying to do all the time. And like trying to find yourself on the inside is a hard thing to do. But I do think reinvention is possible. I do. I really do.
I do too. And then I say it out loud. I think reinvention is possible. And then I think, but it's really hard.
It's really hard. And I think for all of these characters, and probably true in real life, it requires some forgiveness. And it's not forgiveness that you seek from other people, but how do you forgive yourself for what you've done or what you've created or what you've, like the lapsed Catholic in me, you know, got these professions of faith in what I've done and in what I have failed to do. Those are two different things, you know, your actions and your failures.
So do you think Faye, the main character in your novel, Westerly, like she was a child when she came to America and she was told never to say anything, to keep it a secret. And she chose to keep that secret throughout almost her entire life.
Yeah.
So was that her fault? Like, did she need to ask for forgiveness for keeping that secret? I just couldn't figure that out because I felt like, well, as an adult, yes, you're responsible for your own actions and what you do. But as a child, if you're told, right, like threatened, do not ever tell the secret. So I felt both ways for her.
Yeah, I think that she needed, by the end of the novel, to tell Maeve and Molly her story. I think that made sense. I think that it would have been lovely for her, this fictional character, for her to be able to tell her husband, William, to see what his response would have been. And she came so close a couple of times when William and Maeve have this lovely conversation about Maeve's sexuality. And Faye gets so mad because she sees that Maeve tells William the truth. And he's like, yeah, honey, I love you no matter what. That's cool. I'm fine.
Right.
And she's like, wait, is that all it would have taken?
I know.
And is it too late now? Is it too late for me? Like, she's so close. She's so close at all these junctures. But William was also of that silent generation. He did not want to talk about war. He did not want to talk about what he saw in Germany. He did not want to talk about things that he had done. And so that piece of it for her was closed too. If he had been open with her about his experiences of war, maybe she would have been able to be open too. So, we don't fault William in the way that we fault Faye, because he is of that generation of men mostly who came back from war and did not talk about what their experiences were. Just like my father, he never talked about what he saw or did.
Yeah. I mean, I think in my experience, most people who go to war don't talk about it outside of their, you know, maybe immediate people that experienced it with them.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to go there. And this brings us all the way back to the beginning of our conversation where we were talking about you just go forward, just move on. And that's how you survive.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about survival.
Yeah. I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out on New Hampshire Public Radio. We are talking to Susan Donovan Bernhard about her brand new novel, Westerly. Susan, I want to shift the conversation a little bit now. We've known each other for a long time.
Very long time.
Since before either of us were published.
Yes.
Since before either of us had agents, even.
Yes, definitely.
So I was wondering if you would share a little bit about your journey. Like, I love hearing you talk about how you got your first agent. It's just so inspiring.
Is it?
It is. I mean, I know it was heart-wrenching at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, publishing is a really, really tough journey, honestly. And I had written Winterloon. I had early on, I had a lot of faith in it. You know, I loved the story. I loved these characters. I believed in the book. And I'd gotten a lot of early feedback that said, you know, that this is going to be a slam dunk. You're going to get an agent. It's not going to be a problem. And I ended up querying 100 agents. And over the course of over a year, and when I'm getting into the 90s, things are slowing down considerably because I was getting really tired of rejection. It was really painful. Rejection is very painful in publishing. And I heard about this agent who responded quickly. And I was like, yeah, I'm ready to take a punch in the face. You know, I just figured I'd just get a quick rejection. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm ready for a punch. Right. And he responded very quickly and asked for the full. And a few days later, called me on a Saturday and offered representation. And I was shocked, just shocked. So that was the journey.
Every time I hear that, 100 rejections.
Yeah, 99 rejections. He was number 100. Yeah.
And I tell that story all the time because people will be like, new authors, you know, this is a show dedicated to emerging new authors. And they'll be like, oh, you know, I had to query 30 times before I got an agent. And I just think, you have no idea.
Yeah. Oh, spreadsheet is beautiful. It's all colorful of, you know, how quickly I got rejected. You know, got a big red. You know, so it's like red and orange and green and purple and yellow.
Oh, my God.
Beautiful.
I can only laugh now because you've had such incredible success. And you ended up selling both of your novels, your first one, Winterloon, and now Westerly, to Amazon, to an imprint called Little A. And I want to talk about that because you have had incredible success. You have sold an enormous number of books, like out of this world success, through Amazon. And yet your book is not readily available in bookstores because it's with Amazon.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Sure. So some independent bookstores, I understand it, they are reluctant to carry Amazon publishing books because Amazon is considered the enemy of the independent bookstore because they sell books at a discounted price from what the cover is. And I understand it, but I also think that what independent bookstores can do, and please, I feel so scared talking about this because it's like the third rail, you know, for an author to be critical of an independent bookstore. But here's what independent bookstores can do. Independent bookstores can champion local authors in a way that Amazon cannot. Amazon is a machine. It's based on data and numbers and algorithms. If independent bookstores want to create community, they can do that by championing the authors who walk into their stores and say, here's a book that I wrote. Take a chance on me. Because that's what Amazon cannot do. What Amazon can do, though, and why my book is in front of more people than it might be if it was only sold in independent bookstores or if I only relied on that for a revenue stream, is that the book does get in front of people who cannot go into an independent bookstore for whatever reason. They don't have one in their community. They work multiple jobs. They don't have access to the library, whatever it is, or just out of convenience. And when Winterloon was published, I really came to understand that because I would get emails from readers. And what they have in their rented apartment that's very small that they share with their family is they have a Kindle. And the Kindle lets them have all the books that people who live in big houses and have bookshelves can put on their shelves and access whenever they want. The Kindle lets readers read when they want to in the way that they want to. And I appreciate that. I'm holding right now, you can't see it, but I'm holding my hardcover and it's beautiful. I love everything about it. When I take the book jacket off, it's a beautiful book. It's a gorgeous book. But not everybody can have shelves and shelves of hardcovers in their house or afford them.
Yeah.
Or paperbacks.
And I think that, you know, most people don't even notice who the publisher is in a book, right? There's
no.
a very small number of us.
No.
Even a lot of writers don't pay attention
no.
to who your editor is, who your publisher is. So I don't know that the rest of the, you know, that many, many readers even understand that Amazon is opening up this world of books that is not otherwise available to readers.
Yeah.
And also holding up authors who otherwise wouldn't be out there.
Yeah. I mean, my book was available to be acquired by any number of publishers, and I would have been happy with a good deal from any publisher. This is the publisher who wanted my book. This is the publisher who read my novel, who said, oh yeah, I want to publish this book. I want to turn your story into this product. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. And I know that so many other authors at different levels use these tools to get their stories in front of readers. And that's what we're trying to do. Like, we labor away on writing these stories. And it's art to us. It's art when it reaches a reader, right? No matter how we get that reader to read, it's the sharing of that story.
And what Amazon has done for you, which is unbelievable for a novel that is, you know, an author's second novel. We're talking about Susan Donovan Bernhard's book, Westerly, is the book is not even officially published yet. We're still a week or two out from publication.
One week.
Thank you. But you were a part of this First Reads program in Amazon. So Kindle users who are enrolled in Kindle Unlimited have a first, you know, crack at reading it before it comes out. And you already have almost 2,000 reviews on a book that isn't even published yet. I mean, a lot of writers on the show struggle to get 200 total, right?
Yeah.
Let alone 2,000. I mean, just in terms of opening up your readership, that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of upsides to being with little A, with Amazon's imprint. What are some of the downsides? Are there any?
Well, the downside is definitely that I don't get to walk into an independent bookstore and see my book on the table for the most part. But just because you get published by a big five publisher or an independent publisher does not mean your book will be in the store. And it's just the hard truth of publishing. Don't plan to write a book and get rich. It's just,
I always come back to this. My friends who are publishing through Amazon, like I said, and self-publishing are selling a lot more books.
Yeah.
And they just have more readers. And that is my dream as a writer, right? To have as many
readers. Yeah.
Yeah. I want people to read my story.
Yeah.
Now, some people think that if you publish with Amazon, Little A, or mm-hmm. Thomas & Mercer, or any of their imprints, they have a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
You cannot be part of the literary fiction world, right? With a capital, right? L, capital F. What do you have to say to that snootiness that comes into play sometimes?
Snootiness is a really interesting word, right? Winter Loon, my first novel, won the Julia Ward Howe Prize for Fiction from the Boston Authors Club. And it was up against any other book that was published in that year. And it doesn't matter who the publisher was. And this group, this jury, chose Winter Loon. And I felt like that was such a validation of my work, because a lot of times I think that people who are published by small presses or any of the imprints of Amazon Publishing, they're not seen in the same way as someone published by one of the big fives. And so getting attention for the smaller presses or the less glittery presses, I think is really lovely. And I'm happy with this journey. I really am. I would love to win a National Book Award. Absolutely. Put me up for it. But I also love when I get emails from readers who say that a book that I've written has resonated with them and has changed them in some way. That's an award right there. So I'm happy with that.
Susan Donovan Bernhard, thank you so much for joining me here on Check This Out.
Thank you. It's so fun to be here in the studio with you.
I'm Rachel Barenbaum, author of the novels Abandon the Stars and Atomic Anna. You have been listening to Check This Out, a show where I get to do one of my favorite things in the world, talk to other writers about their brand new books. Check This Out is a partnership between New Hampshire Public Radio and the Penn Faulkner Foundation. I'll be back next week with another new author you should not miss. Our producer is Jessica Hunt. NHPR's program director is Emily Quirk. Our partner, the Penn Faulkner Foundation's mission is to champion the breadth and power of fiction in America. The show is sponsored by C&S Wholesale Grocers Family of Companies, the podcast Totally Booked with Zibby and Zibby's Bookshop, and the Jack and Dorothy Byrne Foundation. Remember to go to your local library or bookstore and check out all the books we're talking about this season. Thank you so much for listening. Read on.